The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip. I am John Paz, and on today's John Paz Versus, my new series here on the Russo brand, I am welcoming in a podcasting legend, a comedy genius, a man that is, you know, topping the charts all over the world. He is the lead man behind Get My Go, in my personal view. He is Yuzi. Hello, Adam Hughes. How are you doing today, sir?
I tell you the problem with that fucking John Wangland. can I just point out that my screen name is spelled on purpose that way?
Yeah, why is that? How come you can't spell?
It's just me being hilarious. Oh, well, I changed it there, but did it? No.
Hughesy, gorgeous faced, modest genius. That's pretty good.
Because I don't want people to think that I'm letting my perfect life go to my gorgeous head.
Nice. Love it. Now, I know I talked to you about this on your show, but I'd like to kind of mention it on my show, almost like a little Seinfeld thing. Is it, it's Hughesy, hello, or it's Hughesy, hello? You know what I mean? Like, how do you say it properly?
I'll go with the second one today.
Okay.
But it changes per mood.
So as far as the show, it's Hughesy, hello, what is it? Tell us everybody about it. I know a little bit of comedy, a little bit of music. You got a lot of stuff going on. Break it down. Yeah.
Well, basically, it's a comedy interview show, in my opinion. I like to think that it's more lighthearted stuff. I actually do a lot of research per interview, so that if I got like Stone Cold Steve Austin on, I wouldn't say to him, "So, do you regret walking out of the WWE?" Because he's spoken about that a million times. So that's one of the things that I can boast about with my show, all joking aside, that you do get a lot of interviews where a lot of topics that weren't covered before in other interviews. Like, for example, I had Bruce Pritchard on, and I don't know if you ever heard the rumor / plans that The Undertaker was going to be linked with the NWO in 2002.
Don't recall that at all.
Yeah, there was, but apparently Taker basically said, fuck off. That there was some sort of plan for him to be linked with Hogan and Nash and Hall to down the line lead to Taker versus Hogan, but obviously that all got cancelled. So I asked Pritchard about it, who denied it, but then on his fucking show with fucking Conrad, he goes, well, there was talk about it. It's like, that's not what you told me, cunt. Yeah. And he does that. Here's another thing I'm going to say. Did you know that the plans for WrestleMania 14 for Bret Hart were?
Bret versus Shawn, the rematch.
I was told Bret versus Ken Shamrock in a submission match, because at WrestleMania 13, they teased it, all this shit. I'd heard this for years. I interviewed Pritchard. He said no. I interviewed Ken Shamrock. He said yes. I met Bret Hart at a Q&A thing. And he said, well, it was spoken about. And then fucking Pritchard goes on just Conrad's shit show and fucking says, he goes, oh yeah, that was the plan. It's like, you piece of shit, you fucking liar.
Oh, you said 14. I'm sorry. I'm confusing it. 13, I'm thinking, was Brett Shawn rematch. Okay, that would have been interesting. Brett versus Shamrock, WrestleMania 14. Look at you breaking scoops here and getting all this inside knowledge.
That's the thing, is that I haven't really watched pro wrestling much since early 2001. And even at that, I'd say later 2000, because with school coming in and you had to really get serious, like, oh, whatever the fucking social life. And then with Raw and SmackDown, it was too much to keep tabs of what was going on. But from about 96 until 2000, later 99, I'm the mark. Like, I have an encyclopedic knowledge of that shit for no reason. It's a waste of time. I'm going to die.
So when did you actually become like a big fan? Like, when did you actually start getting into it?
I can specifically remember it was in August 1991, because I was up at my went to my grandparents' house, and they had what was called Sky Satellite TV, which would be in America it's known as cable. Yeehaw, surfing. And he was watching Sky Sports, and then WWE Primetime came on, and I'd seen NWA, which was like really dimly lit, and all these guys. So then, you know, you hear Vince going, we're not sure about our SummerSlam preview. Here's Bret the Hitman Hart. And Bret turns up with these fucking visor glasses. And I'm like, what? Is he a fucking robot? Look at the size of him. It's like RoboCop with these. This isn't. And you're just looking, and everything's so bright, and I had this like digital background shit. So that enough is like, okay, I'm going to be a fan of that guy for life. Then the next promo is Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. And they're holding this giant shiny gold belt. Warrior's face is fucking painted. His biceps are enormous. Hogan's a giant, and he's doing all the mannerisms. And you go, I'm in for life. Like, I'm never fucking out of this. But the way I see wrestling today is it's like keeping in touch with an ex. You don't want to get back with her. You just want to stay friendly with her. But you can gradually see her losing her looks over time, and you think, ah, look at those legs, that fat leg bitch. She used to have a nice arse. Now she looks like a fucking lawnmower repair man.
Yeah, it's almost like you got to check in on Raw or whatever. I'm just checking in. It's horrible. They look horrible. That's not what it once was. Yes.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's crazy. It's like, you look at wrestlers who, now I'm not saying that I could take them in a fight, but they just don't look tough. Like, even John Cena, as huge as he is and muscular as he is, like, and to be honest, like, he would kill me with one punch, but he doesn't look tough. Whereas Stone Cold Steve Austin looks for real. Like, he could take on an army holding guns and it would be a fair fight. You go, right, that's why I've got to watch this shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, even, I know Cena's big and stuff and Batista's big, but yeah, I don't know. Some of these guys today, more so, I don't know, like Seth Rollins of the world, Finn Balor's of the world, pretty small in retrospect, especially to even the guys of the era before them. I mean, it seems like maybe minus Reigns and Strowman, but there's a few guys that are big, but most of the guys getting smaller and smaller and smaller. It's crazy.
Yeah, more like Finn Balor, am I right? But yeah, I remember being at a show down in Dublin for a thing called OTT Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Christmas show. So me and a couple of my boys went down to Dublin for the night to go in the drinking. And then we went to the show. And I hadn't been to a wrestling show in decades, since early 93. And I didn't know that they sell the shirts in the entranceway. And I remember walking past these kids behind this table. And I looked over, and everyone was like crowding around. I was like, I don't want any shirts. And then my friend says, yeah, but you can go get your photo taken. And I was like, well, who? And the kid selling the t-shirts was the Young Bucks.
Whoa, nice.
And I was like, there are a couple of fruits. Like, they're short. They don't look tough. They were by far smaller than me. Cody Rhodes was there. He didn't look like he could go. Marty Skull looked like a fucking dwarf. And then I was like, well, these are the fucking wrestlers everybody's marking out for.
But they're not big.
They're not, or, and they're not big, they're not tough. And that night, the wrestling was so bad that I think that's what officially killed it for me. Like, I hadn't been that much of a fan for a while, but that night was just shit. I hated it.
The thing is, I remember when I was starting to get a little bit older as a fan, you know, the Hardy Boys are coming up. You're like, oh, who are these guys? They're kind of small. In retrospect, they're both, I think, around 6 foot, 6 foot one. I think Jeff might be a little bit taller. But, you know, they're probably 230 pounds or so, you know, give or take. Then you go the Young Bucks, like, okay, they're well under 200. They're probably 5'9"-ish. Nick might be a little bit taller. But it's funny. It's like those guys, the Hardy Boys, you're like, oh, they're so small. They're way bigger than the Young Bucks, a lot bigger than those guys.
I have a theory that the Hardy Boys' popularity came from Lita, because they'd been around for what, about half a year before they linked up with her, and then it just blew up because they looked like a couple of girls wearing girl clothes. Then next thing you know, they've got this gorgeous woman with them, and you go, they're pretty cool. And Lita, to this day, if she wants it, I'm giving it to her. But I'm only really joking. I have shagged her. 4 out of 10.
Oh, damn. She still looks pretty good from what I've seen.
Yeah. She looks really better good in the face than ever before. Yeah. Maybe could do a bit of leg day once in a while. Oh,
ouch. She is the reason Edge got over, too.
You're fucking right. The Edge is another guy who I've met in person, and he looks insane. He'd get these incredibly starry eyes like that. And we were just talking about the Foo Fighters, and it was he is class, though, Edge.
It's funny with him. I never got him. I don't get it. I know he's a big guy. He's got a good look. Very, very soft in the ring. I do not like that style, per se. Just never got into him, which is funny. So many people are like, oh, his Royal Rumble return is awesome and all this other stuff. Just never a fan. I know he's better than all the guys that are wrestling today, for sure, just because he's from a different era and they have different psychology and he actually knows how to work. But just was never got into him. But I did like when Lita was paired with him, doing that that sex in the ring, live sex and stuff. He was okay then.
She is incredible. But the thing about Edge has got that thing where he's such an amazing heel.
Mm-hmm.
Where I remember, what was the Mania? Well, it was after the scandal leaked out about him and Matt Hardy and Lita. And everybody just hated Edge to the point where you're like, oh, I hope they beat the fuck out of him. Obviously, nobody was going to touch him, the professionals. But in your head, you're thinking, I hope that Chris Benoit gets in there and beats the shit out of him. He mm-hmm. seems like a great guy, Benoit.
maybe not. Yeah, maybe a little bit wrong on that. It is interesting, though. Like you first fell in love probably SummerSlam 91-ish, Hogan and Warrior, and then obviously Bret winning the IC title. That was kind of like your first memory, and basically that's what hooked you.
Yeah, and then on the other side, WCW had Sting. And he was feuding with the Horsemen, and you see guys like Sid Vicious. Was he? Yeah, he was Sid. Yeah, he was Sid Justice in WWF.
Yes,
and Sid Vicious. Sid Vicious, and he was just massive. And then, like Vader came in, and Vader versus Sting. Those matches I still would watch on the network, and they still hold up. And oh my God, loved it.
So good. Sting Vader might be my favorite feud of all time. They never had a bad match. They're always amazing. If you want to go star ratings, you know, for star rating fans, they're all high rated stars in my book. I think they'd be awesome matches. But the thing is, which is great to me, is like, okay, I watch Sting Vader. There's a match from WCW Pro from about 92, and it's only an 8 to 10 minute match, but it's awesome. And it's like, how come guys today, like AEW will have like a 20 minute match and you already know the outcome, it's going to be terrible. How come they can have an awesome 8 to 10 minute match and it leads to something? And then the guys today have a 20 minute match and it's horrible and it doesn't lead to anything. And the outcome was so predictable that it was worthless wasting the 20 minutes. So you just end up flicking right the channel away.
But I think it's also kind of got to that thing where It's just wrestling's been going on for so long that we're conditioned to it all. And we know, right, this match is going to lead to nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to spend 15 minutes watching this shit. It means nothing. It may go to a pay-per-view, which is going to lead to nothing, and it's all going to head. Everything depends on the third pay-per-view. And that's when you get the finish. And it's just, it's like if you go to watch a box set, you know that the first episode's generally going to be bad. It's going to introduce all the characters, the storyline, the plot. It doesn't really kick in until episode 3, and that's when you go, hooked. And I don't really know what I'm talking about right now. I kind of rambled a bit. But
Makes sense.
But with wrestling, it's just that there's nothing there. I think for adults, I think it's dead. I think it's for kids of a certain age. They get too old, then the next batch of kids come in, just like at a Pat Patterson's house, allegedly. Oh,
damn. Too soon. As far as WWE, though, it says, or they're according to metrics and stuff, they basically skew 45 years and older is their fan base, which is kind of scary because I know when me and you were younger, it was that big 18 to 34 was the big fan base.
Yeah, like I've been watching a lot of 1998 Raws, and I don't know who that was. Like some of the shit, it was when the Nation was feuding with DX, and DX had been locked up in a room backstage, apart from China or something. That Triple H had been jumped in the ring, and so the Nation has China, and The Rock pretty much threatens the raper in the ring. And then the DX makes the save, but these days, like not saying that they should be saying that shit, obviously,
right?
But these days, like you would never get that sort of edginess in the. But at the same time, it was kind of intense back then. I don't know. I just think that we got lucky. It's like it's 70s people who like 70s rock and roll. If you were alive in the 70s. You got the glory days, then it all sort of maintained, but it was never as good.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at, basically for me, I started watching in the 80s and the 90s. That was so good. Anything after that is kind of just downhill from there. Who's kind of like some of your guys? Like, you're watching 98 Raw, you big Stone Cold Steve Austin fan, you're liking The Rock. Who were you a big fan of?
Well, that's one of the things about back in 1998, watching pro wrestling, pretty much everybody I was a fan of. Like there was very few that I didn't like. But people like the NWO, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, even you know who's wildly underrated back then was Bradshaw.
Yep.
Like nobody gave a shit. And but he had a lot of great matches. Like who was the NWA feud he had with Jeff Jarrett, like that, they had lots of great matches, and I thought that back then he really could have and should have been someone that was elevated at the time.
Yeah, it took about seven more years for him to start to get six or seven more years really for him to hit the main event with JBL.
Oh yeah.
So, were you aware of like writers and writing back then, or that never crosses your mind? Like, oh, who's writing this? Who's booking this? Who's responsible for this?
No, I knew that it was scripted, and so I knew that. So, but you could always tell. But what gave it away for me was I remember when I had started getting in my early teens, and I watched this old Andre the Giant match, and he punched Hacksaw Jim Duggan twice, and I was just like, "That, how'd that not cut him?" And then you go, is this fake? Is this the Undertaker not really a zombie? And then, so I knew that it was like actors doing all that sort of shit. And Undertaker being in Suburban Commando really didn't help matters. Like, yep. He played a squeaky voice comedy guy in the Hulk Hogan film. But so I knew it was scripted and all that shit, but I loved it. I remember one of the greatest moments ever as a fan was when X-Pac debuted in DX because he'd only just been in WCW as an NWO guy. Now he's in DX, and there was no hype or build up of him coming in, and you're just is this a war? You don't know who's going here, who's going there. WWE was getting really huge again, so that's why in 98 everybody became a mega mark.
Oh, big time. I was huge into it. And when Waltman went over there and went back to WWF, that kind of killed it a little bit for the NWO and WCW, because that was the one guy you kind of couldn't let escape, because, I don't know, he had the coolness. He was an awesome in-ring guy. He fit in so well with the NWO. Then Triple H, who's basically floundering in WWF, he's doing okay in OK feuds with Foley, who's kind of bringing him up to speed and kind of making him into a star, but he was like kind of nothing, kind of just there. All of a sudden you put Waltman, who's an NWO guy, into DX with Triple H, elevated Triple H, and really kind of set off DX. You don't get an NWO guy in DX, DX is going to be basically nothing. So you take the NWO rub, you give it to Triple H and DX, and that kind of skyrocketed him and really helped out his career, which nobody ever really talks about or mentions, which is odd.
Yeah, and I don't think that X-Pac gets a lot of credit for how huge a moment that was for the Monday Night Wars, because yep. Had he been healthy, and if they'd have said, okay, at the next pay-per-view, it's going to be Steve Austin versus X-Pac, I think that would have been massive. I think it would have been bigger than him versus Foley.
Dude Love. See, the thing is with that is it's just like people don't realize how huge and monumental, by the way, that the NWO was, and you know how big they were to lose Waltman. I know Bischoff said he had the neck injury, then he tried to hit him up for more money, is the story. His agent really tried to get some more money, and he said, no, you can't even wrestle, I'm letting you go. It was just a big mistake. You can't let an NWO guy at the hottest point go to the other organization, because everybody was like, holy shit, six, you know, 1, 2, 3 kids back at WWF, and you know, they flip over. So that was a huge mistake by Bischoff.
Yeah, but it's funny you mentioned that, because just earlier today, and this is a little a bonus, this is not my real hairstyle. This is lockdown hair. I've tried to tidy it up. Haven't been able to get a cut since October, so this is not my usual hair. Usually it's much, much shorter. But anyway, I think that Eric Bischoff, despite all his successes, he is a fuck-up. Because just today I uploaded, there was a clip to the Keeping Them 100 official on YouTube, everybody. That's the only official place to hear the content from the controversial podcast, which is by Conan and Disco Inferno. And they were talking about how the NWO Wolfpack reunion angle, it seemed to like taper off after 2 weeks because Hogan wanted to turn face. And they could have done all this shit with like Wolfpack versus Goldberg and Bret Hart and Bam Bam Bigelow, all these, and Ric Flair, but instead Hogan went face, and that's stupid Bischoff allowing it. And that's why I think that Bischoff really, he skates by and gets away with a lot of criticism. I think it's because he keeps passing the blame to Russo. But there's no way Russo would have done something that fucking stupid. Like, that could have turned the tide back to WCW's favor, but instead they just went back to the PG babyface Hogan shit that nobody wanted.
It was a bit of a misstep for sure, and Hogan's creative control card, which he could play at any time, definitely played a role. I know to get him, you had to, you know, I'd obviously helped basically resurrect and save the wrestling business when they got him there, because WWF was in the shitter. The NWO literally changed the wrestling business and totally, totally created the Monday Night Wars and set it off. But in order to get Hogan, initially, he had to have creative control. So that is always a problem. And you know, Bischoff and Hogan were very, very close. So, you know, maybe Bischoff could have talked him out of some things, or maybe, you know, could have done some things a different way. But, you know, Hogan was saying, I'm getting what I'm getting, brother, or this doesn't work for me, brother.
I get a question for you, though. I always say it's perfectly fine for someone to mark out one day a year. You're allowed to completely, and for me, it's usually WrestleMania or the Rumble. Where it's like, no, mark out all you want. It's once and then never, not for another while. But what's the one gimmick that to this day, whether it's modern or old school, that you still can totally mark out for?
I don't know why I always loved the Royal Rumble. I guess it's just kind of ingrained because I just remember watching it as a kid, and I remember watching Rumble 89. I literally was just talking to a buddy of mine who I've known for 30 years. I was like, remember we used to go over to your grandparents and we used to watch all the wrestling stuff, and he was saying, oh my God, remember when Action Smash were 1 and 2 in the Royal Rumble? And I was like, oh yeah, in the Rumble 89. Like, we were like getting into it, talking about the Royal Rumble stuff. It's just something about it. I guess you have like that good impression when you're a kid, and then throughout the years, they have these cool surprises and stuff. Royal Rumble, I always gets me. I know I'm not really an Edge guy, but that last year was a really cool surprise of him returning. And then Lesnar was awesome in that Rumble. I don't know, something about the Rumble. I guess it's like every 2 minutes you get somebody else, and it could be a surprise. It could be cool. Maybe it'll be a letdown. Oh, maybe. You know, I don't know. For some reason, the Royal Rumble always excites me. What about you?
For me, it's got to be the NWO. Anytime I see that shit on a clip, I just can't help. Like, I'm so much of an NWO mark that when I interviewed Eric Bischoff, I got him to make me a member. During the interview. So it's like, why would I? So I'm in the NWO. I'm going into the Hall of Fame. Is it this year, next year, whatever? And even to the point where I can remember me and a few friends, and we were driving down to Slane Castle to see Guns N' Roses. When we get on the highway, we were like looking around the cars, and we're like, "Put the NWO music on," and we're just drinking a beer while in the car, fucking like do 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 do, because we're fucking marks.
That is my high point as a fan, is the NWO. Me and my friends, my brother, we were obsessed. Like, oh no, I'm Hall. Like, no. Like, we literally would pretend we're the guys. So my buddy's like, "No, I got first pick. I'm Hall." So I'm like, "All right, I guess it'll be Nash." You know, my brother, somebody else, you get to be Hogan. But we were like obsessed with those guys. And literally we gang beat up, not really, but, you know, wrestling style, beat up all of our football teammates. We'd have like Royal Rumbles where all of a sudden we take off the shirts and we're all wearing NWO. We gang fight people. Oh, it was the best. We were obsessed. School, they would say, "What are you guys in a gang? Why are you guys all wearing the black and white?" And we all had the shirts and stuff. I even had that awesome Hogan shirt. Literally, it's, you know, like the cutoff with the cuts in the back, Terminator style. I had that. I wore it to school. They're like, "You can't wear this in school. What the hell is wrong with you?" We were obsessed with the NWO. Holy shit. And even loves Crow Sting, too, because it was almost like they were like Joker and he was like Batman. He was just so cool. You didn't know what he was doing. Mysterious. He'd come in and he'd beat him up and he'd leave. It's just, I don't know. I love the booking. Throwing Piper and Lex Luger, who I love. I was obsessed with the NWO, but I love WCW. They were the best.
Yeah, but with NWO versus Sting, because Sting would turn up twice a month, and you never knew when. And he was the only guy that the NWO would sell for. Like, Hogan would literally run away from him on TV, and he never ran except for the leg drop. And everything about it was just like, even to this day when I watch that stuff back, I just think like that's the best faction ever. That's as good as it got.
I will literally all the time, and because a friend of mine always like texts me like, you know, YouTube clips and stuff. So then as soon as you click on it, you just go down that rabbit hole. So I'll do like Sting pops, because a buddy of mine who was more like a WWF guy was like, "Oh, I don't think Sting was as popular as Austin." I was like, "Maybe I can get your point, what you're saying, but I go, watch this clip." So I sent them Uncensored 97. Remember the NWO wins, they clear the ring, blah, blah, blah. Rodman, Hogan are cheering on, you know, Giovanni's completely pissed off, who was so great as an announcer and did such a good job. He's pissed off. All of a sudden, it's Sting. He comes down and he goes, "What side is he on?" And then he beats the shit out of Hall, Nash, and then Savage. And then he goes, "Drop him too. Drop him." Oh, like they were like going nuts. And then, Dusty was so great. He's like, "Get in the ring, Hogan, get in the ring." He goes, "Get his ass, get him." So like, if you just listen to that crowd and that pop, you like, you know, you get like obsessed with it. You're just like, holy shit, what a pop. What a moment. Beats the shit out of Hogan. Then he, you know, he wants Rodman. Just the crowd is going nuts. So I literally found clip after clip after clip of Sting, just because I want to go down that rabbit hole, getting just ginormous pops that literally like deafening pops, him beating up the NWO. Just, I was like, man, I was like, I love this shit. I love, because I lived it once. I love going back and reliving it, because you had that moment once as a kid, and you're like, this is the coolest shit ever. Now reliving, you're like, man, that was pretty cool. I was right.
Yeah, maybe my favorite WCW angle ever was the night that the Giant was kicked out of the NWO, because he'd won a title shot or something.
At World War III, yeah.
Yeah, and Hogan wouldn't give him the shot, so the NWO jumped the Giant, and even by their standards at the time, it was pretty extreme beating. It was like a fucking 11-on-1, and they're beating him with a steel chair, and then Sting comes out and has two baseball bats, and he gives one to the Giant, and then the two of them take on the NWO, and it's just like, oh my God, this is like, and now what have we got? Fucking Jericho and MJF singing and dancing.
One of my favorite moments ever, and you got to do this every January 1st, like New Year, New Me, Sting, when he takes off the Sting mask and it's him. So I would say, oh yeah, New Year, New Me. Yep, still me. There's an awesome one where all the fake Stings are coming out. Giovanni's like, oh, they're all fake Stings. He's like kind of a downer, kind of like, oh man, they're all getting their ass kicked. All of a sudden, Buff punches the Sting and he's got no effect. And Giovanni goes, oh boy, it's Sting. Like, yo, he's going nuts. And then he takes off the Sting mask and it's really him. And Buff's like, oh shit. Sting clears the ring and beats the hell out of all of them. And then like Piper slowly gets up. But I don't know. It's one of my favorite ones. I was like, I love that with all the fake Stings because you have no idea what's going on. You're like, why the hell is there a million fake Stings? They're all getting their ass kicked. And then the real Sting is wearing a fake mask, pulls it off, and he's got the face paint on and beats the shit out of the NWO. I mark out for stuff like that. I love it.
How surreal is it though for you today as a fan to be able to like not socialize so much but to interact as often as you do with people from back then? Because like I got my first telling off by Disco Inferno a couple of weeks ago because of a silly thing although while it did work out for the best, I should have listened at the time, but so I'm like, I'm getting fucking yelled at for real by Disco Inferno. And you're looking at your phone and you're like, what the fuck's going on? Like, he lives in Las Vegas. I live in Belfast. And Disco Inferno, the guy from WCW, is calling me a fucking idiot. Like, this is insane.
I know. Sometimes I'm like, wow, I can't believe that. Because, you know, I do the show with Sullivan every week. I'm obsessed with WCW. So I'm just like, I was like, oh, yeah, Taskmaster, you know, like, when you book this, what was the thought? And he's like, Hogan didn't want to turn heel, brother. You know, like, you know, really, like, kind of, you know, delve into, like, real stories, not just rumor and stuff, and just, like, really get to talk to him. It's really, really cool. And I know you do the K-100. You're part of the crew there with Disco and Conan, so that's awesome.
Yes, you're correct. I made that show what it is. I know you were about to say that. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But... Yeah.
You made that show what it is.
Yeah, because, see, that's the problem with Keeping 100 is that for like some reason, and I don't know why, for like 6-7 months, that YouTube channel couldn't get over 200 subscribers. And it was driving me insane. And like you get all this great content, like here's Chris Jericho doing a 20-minute interview, 7 views. And you're like, how the fuck is this possible? So what I started doing was clickbaiting and completely vague titles and unnecessary photos and images used just to dupe people in. Next thing you know, they're getting we're approaching 12 million views. Hopefully, past that today. Which
wow!
Means
nice. Wow, though. Thank nice. You. Good work. Nice. I know that. You know, I hate to say this, but you know, Joe Feeney's not going to get it done. You know what I mean? That you had to get it done.
See, the problem with Joe Feeney is, and I don't mean any disrespect to him, he's a scumbag, piece of shit, low-life loser. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but knowing that fucking snowflake, he'll take that the wrong way just because he's a piece of shit. Yep. And, of course, what do you call me a piece of shit for? And I'll just deny it that I ever said it because that's the way of Wangland.
Oh, yes. See, I like Feeney. I like to joke around with him because he never puts me over, but... Who you just said, John Wangland, has put me over before. So I got to give John the thumbs up on that one. I got to give Feeney thumbs down. You know what I mean?
I think John might want to put you over his knee. For podcasting advice, not for anything else. I'm not making any accusations there, man. But I always say, if it quacks like a duck and it looks like a duck, then it's a fruit. No, I'm only kidding. Love is love.
Of course, though. We are talking about... a lot of people's favorite shows, your favorite show. Mike Durbin does an awesome job on it. Joe Feeney does a great job, but you kind of the glue guy. I know you haven't been on for a few weeks, but you're kind of the glue guy there for Get My Go. John Wangland and his crew have the show that you guys basically parody each week. What do you think about, really, really, give me, don't sugarcoat it. What do you think about Cheap Heat and Cheap Pops? Don't sugarcoat it.
I remember an interview he did with Dan Severn, and this is before I ever fell out with him, with Wangland. And to this day, I think it's the worst podcast I've ever heard. A lot of people think I exaggerate when I say this, but for 25 minutes, and I mean literally 0 seconds to 25 minutes, he read the same 7 plugs in a row. And if you might think that's an exaggeration, it's on the episode. He's like, we've got all these great shows here, man. You check out a Rad Rob show. You check out the Chris Martin show. Hit us up on the Twitter. And don't forget, the Rad Rob has a thing. And he just kept talking and talking and talking. And it was insane. Because I remember waiting on, I was going to see the Foo Fighters that night. And my friend Phil, who, believe it or not, you'll be shocked to hear this, was running late. I know you don't even know Phil, and it's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Shocking. I'm still waiting to meet him. This is off. But anyway, and I was just sitting in the bar listening to this podcast, and it's so fucking bad. The audio levels are terrible. The intro is so long. Then it gets to the Dan Severn point, and he asks him all these groundbreaking questions, such as, what was it like to debut in the UFC? And it's like, this is terrible. You have to do research and ask them stuff that they've never done before. But my real problem with the show, not the person, is he's a fuck. Like, if Edge and Christian had to shut their show down because the numbers were so bad they weren't getting sponsors, how the fuck is John Wangland getting more than Edge and Christian, who, by the way, were getting guests like John Cena, Randy Orton, fucking Steve Austin, Goldberg, while Wangland talks to some stuttering cunt on fucking Twitch or fucking Skype about the latest Royal Rumble there, man. And you just think, just admit that you fucking, oh my God. I think that type of podcast has to stop. It makes it tougher for everybody else. I don't see the benefit of it.
How did you actually meet him? Because I only heard of him through, you know, Twitter and stuff. Like, I knew the name and stuff, but I didn't really know him. But it's funny, it's like all these people like had relationships with them, they knew him and stuff. Like, how did you come to meet him and, I guess, you know, be friends with him at one point, I guess, right?
Well, when I first started the podcast, and I'm sure you were the same when you started, you just want to interview everybody, because like you don't know what it's like. That's not going to make a good episode. You just like, right, I need 20 guests. Here's 20 episodes. I remember getting speaking to him because his show was called Wrestling with Reality, which was already being used from another show. So it's all over iTunes and all these 5-star ratings. So I initially thought that's him hosting the other Wrestling with Reality.
Right.
So we got talking, and he was a fan of wrestling, and and I was very much into the old school shit. But just very, very quickly, I came to realize that this guy doesn't have a clue. And I don't even think he's a wrestling fan. I just think that he thinks this is a way to get to talk to people. Because when you hear him talk about it, he doesn't know what he's saying. Like a Public Enemy there, man. But which is weird because they weren't actually criminals. It's like, correct, arsehole. But he's going to be the softest soldier ever. I can't understand how somebody could be in the army. Like, because I've said at the time, that's the bravest fucking job ever. I could never do it. I have no balls to do it. I can admit to it. But this guy, who gets fucking offended if you make fun of his hair, was in the army. It's like, so I can try and blow you up, but if I make fun of your fucking hair, that's crossing the line. You need to see a therapist over it. He's a dick.
I'm just curious. There seems to be, I don't know, like all these guys, obviously Durbin, Fiend, yourself, like that know him well. But is there some anger behind there, or is this just for comedic reasons? What's kind of the basis of like, you know the genesis of the show? Was there anger there? Is there betrayal there? I know Joe had some, but what about from your side?
There was anger for a while. Back when I first started the podcast, I was making no money from it at all for months and months, as everybody should be expected to. Then, you make like $80 here, $40 here. You think, oh, a nice bit of extra change. Then at 1 month, thanks to Joe, had me like that piece of shit, Joe Finney, had me like 4 or 5 paid ads plus YouTube money. And there was the affiliates deal with something, some other product that I ended up getting a payment in total of $1,040, let's just call it for this story, dollars. And I was like, holy shit, like that's obviously not retirement money, but it's like that's not pocket change. Like so I was able to give money to my mom, which I hadn't done in ages. I was able to help be like, hey, let's go out tonight, we can afford to spend some of this. And then Wanglin's trying to fucking get us all shut down, and it's like you piece of shit, you jealous, sad little pathetic lonely man. I got over that because his attempts shut down. His attempts to shut us down didn't work. Like I'm sure you know the story about making the video trying to call us fucking racist, which is stupid because my brother's black. So explain that one. And my sister's Asian, which is true. I'll send you the L photos. But so all that stuff. So him, I don't give a shit about. But my real anger though is against that little cunt, Chris Martin. I can understand being a nerd and being a liar, but to pretend to have cancer, to fucking to get people like Conrad Thompson to retweet you, I hope somebody smashes his fucking head in. I actually hope he had cancer, just for him saying that. Like, you deserve it for saying that. He's pathetic. And the thing is that Wangden will not acknowledge any of the accusations. Like, Rad Rob literally showed us photographic proof of the click farms. The head of the Blue Chew advert guy, Steve something, told me personally that he found out they were using click farms. The head of Spreaker, whatever her name is, spoke to Joe Feeney and said they found out he was using click farms. That's why they kicked him off. But he denies it all. And it's like, that's why if you did interview him, you're going to get nothing from me. He's just going to deny it all. Just, no, we shut it down because I wanted to start again. It's like, no, you shut it down because you were kicked off. And all the advertisers knew the reality check network, Wrestling with Reality, was a pile of shit. So he just, his refusal to admit to any flaw, like that's a bad sign of mental health, I think, that if you can't admit to doing anything wrong, can't.
To me, he's becoming, even just from your show, he's becoming so interesting. I'm like dying to, interview him and talk to him. And the fact that Joe Feeney has been so against it makes me want to do it even more. You know what I mean? He's like, no, you don't want to interview the guy. He's a liar. Makes me want to interview him more. You know what I mean? I want to learn more about him. He's so fascinating.
See, that's the thing. You'll learn nothing from him because he won't be honest.
Yeah.
And until I seen a photograph of him in his army gear, fatigues and stuff, I didn't believe he was a soldier because I thought there's no way a pussy like that could be in like the toughest job on the planet. And I still think he's a wimp. I don't think he's a tough guy. I think the way he's such a whiny bitch, because that is, he's like a fucking old, he's like an aunt. You know, lecturing you like, Mr. Paz, who do you think you are speaking to me there, that man? It's like, how could you be in the fucking army? I'm a fucking editor and I could kick his head in. It's like, there's no way a computer geek is tougher than the fucking soldier. But alas.
You do a pretty good impression, though. I gotta be honest. I mean, your Wanglin's pretty good.
That's the thing. I can't tie my shoelaces properly, but I can do a Johnny podcasting. So, oh my God. What kind of fucking name is that?
Hey, that's his nickname, or was his nickname, I guess. I guess it's no longer.
But that's the other thing is, like, how long would you say you were podcasting before you think you became, like, good at it? Like, you knew how to edit and stuff?
It was a while, yeah. It takes time. I mean, you can't just automatically, you're not a natural, I don't think, or very few people are a natural, especially me. I wasn't when we first started.
Yeah, because that's the thing about Wingling, is it, which is what Conan thinks his surname is. He thinks his name is John Wingling. Oh, and by the way, coming soon in April, there will be Get My Go's Wingling Mania.
Whoa, really?
I'm don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be another group recording.
Wow.
What were we talking about there?
Johnny podcasting about how you said I guess he was a natural, I guess, at it.
Yeah, but it's just that the fact that he's been caught out as a liar about his download numbers and the fact that he still doesn't know how to literally podcast. He doesn't know, get a fucking mic, get a headset, edit it, don't use predetermined software, lower the volume, get your sound levels right. And he's on like something like, I think he's done over 500 podcasts.
Whoa.
And they all sound like episode one. And it's like, why would any fan out there who likes wrestling listen to a show that sounds terrible with a guest, has no insider experience, and has no fucking, it's a bad show. Like, it's honestly like, you watch The Office?
I've seen it, yes. Not after Michael Scott left, though. I haven't seen it.
But Michael Scott had a fucking podcast, he would be John Wangland.
I know what you mean. I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's just say this whole time he's been working you guys just to get you fired up. Would you believe that at all? Or, you know, there's no way.
I would say field, because it's actually fun. The only problem I get my go is that I work from Sunday to Fridays. So Saturday's my only day off. So like, and with Durban, he works, I think, Monday to Friday. Joe pretty much works, that piece of shit, Joe Finney. he pretty much works every day. I think like, he works like a half day every day too, or something. So the time off isn't much. So it's really just, once you get some free time, let's make fun of the shittest fucking podcast out there. And I think that one day it's going to catch on. People, because you don't need to hear the show to understand that we're making fun of them.
Right. How come you've taken a few weeks off?
It's just because with time, and then you make prior plans, because it takes so long to record an episode. And just say, right, when they go to record, it's about 4 o'clock here. And then if it goes on for like 2-3 hours, then you weigh into your evening. Then, you know, other people are fucking giving you shit about you. So where the fuck were you all night? We were supposed to be watching the thing. It's like, yeah, I'm sorry. And then you're eating dinner late and your whole day's been stuck behind the computer on your day off. And it's to be honest, it's John Wangland is so boring to listen to that it changes your mood and it can ruin your day. So I like to avoid it. It's not as much as possible, but I like to make sure that I've got the time and patience.
Do you think that you're going to retire from the show, or that the show is going to end anytime soon?
I can't see it ending, for real. I could definitely see maybe, because what Durban started doing is he'll record 2 or 3 episodes at a time so that he can take a break, which is fair enough, because Wangland does like 80%. Well, I'd say he does like 99% of the work. Everybody else just talks. Durban has to actually research and edit and release the stuff. But I can't see it ending, because the good and the bad thing is John Wangland will not change. He will stay the same, and he will not take advice from anybody. So I have a feeling it's only going to get worse. I mean, put it like this. I was thinking about this last night in the nude. Who the fuck says, you know who I'm going to record a wrestling podcast with? Some guy who doesn't even have a computer, who has no fucking insight or experience in wrestling, plus has an unbelievable stammer. That's who I want to podcast with. And all you hear is, And it seems like everyone he records with has some sort of very distinguishable voice or speech impediment. And it's unbelievable. It's like a whack pack accidentally.
With him, though, I know he's challenged you to a fight before. How come with you and him, it seems to be much more personal? I hear him complimenting Durbin. I know he says he's a dope or whatever, but he compliments Durbin all the time. Then all of a sudden with you, he wants to fight you.
Because because he knows that the chances of us ever meeting are very, very low.
Hmm.
If we did meet up, I would in 1 second give him a slow-mo spinning roundhouse kung fu kick while playing air guitar Eddie Van Halen style. I learned how to fight from David Lee Roth. You don't want to fuck with me. But I think his problem is, I think I've brought to the attention of others his silly fucking voice. And I don't think people caught on to the "hey there, man" shit before I started making fun of it. So now everybody does it, and it's great, and it's not going to stop.
With him and you, though, it does seem a bit personal. You know what I mean? I don't know. Something there seems a little bit personal with you guys, for sure.
I think what it is with him is that he keeps calling me a liar over the stuff I accuse him of, and then the proof comes out. And then he's like, "Hey, they're just bullies, and they're just saying all this." It's like, "Well, we're not bullying you. We're making fun of you publicly. Stop behind your back. You can choose to hear it. You obviously do listen." And the thing is, like, there was a time where we joked about him allegedly being on drugs. Well, the fact is this: we recorded a Joe Feeney podcast, me, him, John, and I think Durband, and I'm just saying, I'm not saying he was on drugs, but his face, his eyes were completely dilated and he was talking fucking gibberish, rambling on. His face was twitching and he said he was going to do a podcast with Kit Harington from Game of Thrones. And he denied saying that. And he
Jon Snow?
Yeah. He said they were going to do a podcast together and he denied saying that. Then we played the clip of it on Get My Go, and that's the thing that makes it so fucking great.
That is crazy. I don't know if, I mean, I'm trying to catch up on Get My Go. I don't know if I've heard him say that. That just sounds outlandish. That just sounds crazy.
Yeah, but that's the sort of thing that a person would say while not sober. Not that I'm saying he's on drugs. I'm just saying that's the sort of gibberish people, "Let's all fucking go on holiday together."
So like, Jon Snow is going to go on a wrestling podcast? Just hypothetically speaking?
That's what he said. Here's what my theory is. He found out who Kit Harington's agent was, sent an email off for an interview request, and to him, in his mind, that was an immediate yes.
Oh, okay.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, but my whole thing is just like, when you get caught out in a lie, if you admit to it, like, own up and go, "Yeah, I did it. I'm in the wrong." You people will then get past it. I was accused of clickbaiting Keeping 100's YouTube, which I admitted to. And I said, "Yeah, I did. And I still do," because it was going nowhere. And there was a lot of time going into it with no payoff. So I thought, I've got to do something. So that's why I went 100% clickbait mode. And it's worked out, and I'm going to continue to do it.
It worked. There you go. It worked. How did you get in with those guys? Through Joe Feeney?
Yeah, it's weird because what I used to do is a fan during with Keeping 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I first wanted to start the podcast, he used to have a hosting fee for like editing and releasing your podcast.
Right.
But at the time, I was having serious money problems where, and I know it sounds dramatic, but even spending like the $10 a month or episode or whatever the fuck it was a big dent in my finances because it was so tight at the time. So I said, "Listen, Joe, I genuinely can't afford to spend any money on this. What about if," and I was like, "Well, what about if I meant to say Joe Feeney, the piece of shit, forgot to add that in." So I said, "Well, what about if I make a YouTube channel to promote the show, and you still don't have to like pay me to do it until it becomes monetized?" And it took way, way longer than I assumed it would, but it does seem to have worked out. Like the show, their podcast numbers are doing great. Everybody's social media numbers are up. It's worked out, although it took, It took an insane amount of time to. I'll never understand why it took so long.
It's a weird thing. You know what I mean? With YouTube and all that other stuff to catch on and certain things. Because Conan's got a big base. He's got a big fan base, for sure. Huge fan base.
He's got a big base. He's got a big mouth. And he's got big, lovely cheeks when he does a lovely smile. In fact, anybody watching this should tweet Conan. He loves being tweeted by people. He tells me he wishes it happened more often. And everyone should tweet Conan, "You have a lovely smile." And he will love it because he's known for his friendly personality.
What do you think about your buddy Disco? I know you said you got into a little with him and a little bit of a fight and stuff, but what do you think about Disco?
I genuinely think that Disco is, I think he's one of the best podcasters on the planet. I think sometimes he plays up to the persona of being the, what's the word, contrarian, is that a word?
Yes.
Where he disagrees with everything. But at the same time, that's what makes the show so good. Because like if you ever listen to the Edge and Christian show, it was fucking awful. All they did was agree with each other for 90 minutes. And it was like, this is so dull. Whereas if you go on Conan and Disco's show, they'll argue about stuff 4 weeks. And it's great. Like, but Disco, I do think, because he keeps talking about cancel culture. He says, cancel culture is out there and it's real and they're shutting everybody down. It's like, okay, then don't talk about certain topics publicly. If you don't, that's how cancel culture gets you. Don't talk about Trump. Don't talk about fucking elections or women's rights or gay people. Like there was a thing, someone sent an email in a couple of weeks ago because Disco, I think he was just joking when he said it. But he said that kids playing with the wrong toys can make them gay. And that, like, he was just joking when he said that. It's like, yes, but Disco, then all you need is one snowflake to grab that audio and you're fucked. And thankfully nobody did. And hopefully nobody will now.
That's a dangerous statement for sure. Cause somebody will take that for serious and take it for real and get him in trouble and cancel him and all that other crap that goes on today.
Disco's a weird one though, because he has some of these stories that if you look at Keeping 100, it'll be this really weird thing where someone will write in and like be saying, "Hey, Disco, what's your favorite type of glass?" And he'll go, "Well, I don't know." He goes, "You know, that reminds me of this time that Kevin Nash and Goldberg got into a fight backstage at WCW." And you go, "What?" And then he'll tell this story where you're like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" And then it gets like 40,000 hits in a day. And it's like, this is fucking amazing. But Disco hates telling those kind of stories. And I think he doesn't know how interesting he is. And that's the crazy thing about it all.
He's great. I usually agree with him most of the time, too, because a lot of what he says I know could be tough for some people to listen to. But he's right on hits the nail on the head. He's right on the money a lot.
He 2 or 3 years ago predicted that WrestleMania was going to go to multiple days instead of one show. He also has predicted a lot of the Ronda Rousey stuff. Like it's strange how smart he is when it comes to wrestling. But I think that when anyone outside of wrestling speaks to him about it, it makes him sick.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. You know, when so many people were calling for the wrestling boom, saying AEW, he's like, "I don't see it." And their audience will actually go down. And then you look at the trend, it's like, wow, he was right. He nailed it again. Nobody will admit it, but he was right again.
Yeah, I think that the only wrestling boom we're going to get is for next year is when The Rock comes back for this Roman Reigns match. Because like, for those that don't know, it was supposed to happen for Mania 37. Obviously, even nobody's stupid enough to fucking book it without fans or less fans.
Yep.
So, and next year, it's that AT&T stadium, which holds like 110,000. If you charge, $400 per ticket, I can't do math. You can do the math. The Rock versus Roman Reigns with all these film studios hyping it up. Kevin Hart will be tweeting about it. The fucking the DC Comics people will be tweeting about it. Like, it's going to be, I think that's going to be the biggest wrestling's ever going to get. And then after that, wrestling is, because like, you're never going to top it. Nothing will ever compare. So strap in, wrestling fans, for one final year of hugeness, then it's all done.
It's definitely going to be a big one next year in Dallas. Roman Reigns versus The Rock is definitely the big rumor. I know, like, it was supposed to happen this year. If you look at the storyline and where it was going, that's what they wanted it to be for this year, probably. But obviously, that's not going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do this year, though, for a main event, because obviously Lesnar's going to have to come back. Edge is already back. You have Goldberg. I don't know what he's going to do, but you need some big names in there, because a lot of the guys today aren't going to quite cut it. So I don't know what they're going to do this year as far as a big name is involved. I would hope, you know, you can get somebody else in there. I guess it's going to be Lesnar coming back, but I just don't know for sure.
Yeah, someone was writing in the Keeping of 100 comment section that apparently Lesnar's coming back with, what's the, Pat McAfee?
The punter? Yeah, actually, he was in NXT. Actually pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, apparently they're coming in as a duo, and he's going to be his new Paul Heyman, and it's going to be Lesnar against the Bobby, the Hurt Business. So, like, that could be good, but I don't, like, to see the things, I talk shit about marks all the time, but I'll never miss WrestleMania, ever. Like, even there's been some years where I don't know what the main event is until I actually turn the event on, and I still watch it live. I still love it. It's even last year's, this is going to sound so dumb, but the seriousness of the pandemic didn't hit me until I watched WrestleMania. And then you go, what the fuck? WrestleMania in a garage? Like, no. It's supposed to be in a stadium. What the fuck is this? And I still ended up loving it, which was a strange thing.
That is strange. I only like one match, really. I liked Undertaker, AJ Styles. The only thing I really cared for Mania. Didn't like the rest of the card. It could be the setup at the Performance Center or whatever. I don't know. I didn't care for most of the show.
Yeah, I think that the thing that was nuts about it is that it's not only that WWE had to do their first pay-per-view in the Performance Center, but the fact that they had to pre-tape it, and this was they were basically learning on the spot how to do a no-fan show.
Yep.
And it was just the timing of it. Like, I mean, obviously there's more important stuff than wrestling, but for WrestleMania to happen, it was fucking so bad. And because I think it had a pretty good lineup. Like, what was the women's match? Charlotte versus the big Australian lady. Yeah, I thought that was a good match.
Rhea Ripley, yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, it was okay. Edge Orton, I feel like if it was shaved some time, it could have been better. Obviously, Wyatt versus Cena wasn't technically a match because Cena has an insurance policy out on him where he's not allowed to get hurt. So he's not allowed to actually have matches. I guess you could get away with it if it's short and sweet, but what they did obviously was a way around it. I don't know. Some of the things just I didn't like the Goldberg match. Obviously, it was supposed to be against Reigns. That changed things up. Way too short. I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess. And hopefully this year will be better because they're going to have at least some fans in the building.
Would you like some behind-the-scenes gossip about that Reigns and Goldberg thing?
Yes.
I interviewed, do you know Hannibal from Hannibal TV?
I'm on there all the time. I love Hannibal. It's my boy. That's yeah.
Yep. Stupid question.
It's my buddy. Yep.
He told me he didn't like you. I'm not trying to stir any shit, but there you go. Weird. He told me that Roman Reigns was actually backstage at that WrestleMania. And he just said, no, I'm not doing it. And he literally walked out during the taping. So then they had to do Goldberg versus Strowman out of nowhere. And because Goldberg and Reigns don't get along or didn't get along. And Reigns had publicly said he didn't want to do the match. He wanted to work somebody else. And so he literally did walk out Austin style during the show. And that's why I'm really hoping they don't do that. Because the problem with Goldberg is I loved him back in the 90s. But when you're a power moves guy, if you can't do the power moves, then you shouldn't be wrestling. And And we've seen him a couple of times struggling to lift these fucking people. And it's just, and that, as you said, that Goldberg Strowman thing was awful. And he's lost so many times. It's like, just fuck off.
The thing is, they need star power, so they got to keep bringing it back because they can't make current stars. None of these guys are big time, so they keep reaching to the well and bringing back the legends.
Do you know? I think the problem with that is it's because fans these days are so negative because they hate their life, so their only escape from it is wrestling. So they take the anger out on wrestling, or they're always like that. It's always like WWE, you never try to make any new stars. And they're like, well, what about Jinder Mahal? No, try somebody else. It's like, well, what about fucking Kofi Kingston? No, try someone else. It's like, but we are trying. And that's the problem of the fan. Like, here's my impression. We want what we want until we get it. Then we want something else until we get what we want.
True.
You know, it's like, they could book, Steve Austin versus Hulk Hogan tomorrow, and the fans would complain. Well, obviously, the shooter would be fucking awful, but there's nothing. There is no pleasing wrestling fans. They only, like, you can tell if you watch Raw, or even if you check Twitter while Raw's on. There are people within minutes going, "This sucks. This sucks. I don't know why anyone would watch this shit." It's like, so then don't. They only watch it to bash it, and you think, well, that's your problem.
Yeah, then don't watch it. That's for damn sure. Don't need to watch it. Very toxic, negative energy over there on the Twitter machine, that's for sure. But as we start to wind it down and start to wrap it up, what's going on, Hughesy? Hello, what do you got coming up?
Coming up over the, well, of course, as we speak, the most recent episode, I interviewed this piece of shit called John Piz or something like that. I don't know if you heard it. That's one of my hilarious jokes. Everyone who hears this is probably laughing their head off. So we'll take a break to let them laugh it up. And we're back. Yeah, I did an AC/DC special with John Paz, but coming up next month, we get Vince Russo back on. Went really into depth on original plans for Test. Spoke about an idea of how the Brawl for All could come back. We spoke about a lot of the rumors between Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels. Not that there's anything wrong with that. We did a top five ABBA. I did a pretty interesting interview with a guy called Rich Bocchini, who used to work in NXT, now works in MLW. It's actually got very serious, and he was speaking a lot about how his mental health problems and how WWE didn't help any of that shit. But I have the only reason why I'm naming those two is because those are the ones that are pre-taped. I don't like to announce episodes until they're recorded, just in case I look like an arsehole. But if you want to see the past guests I've had from the world of wrestling, Hollywood, political shit, right-wing shit, you know, comedy, go check out Hughesy Entertainment on YouTube. There's a lot of stuff up there. Check out Keep No 100 Official on YouTube. That's a rapidly growing, very interactive YouTube page from Conan Disco Show. And do not forget to check out Get My Go, which as of this weekend, I'm back on it.
Nice.
And I debuted my glasses.
Oh, can't wait for that. I'm going to have to watch the YouTube one of that one. Thanks.
Very, very, very exciting.
Nice. Awesome stuff. Where can everybody find you? Give me social. Give me all your plugs.
You can find me on social media. I'm at the Hughesy on Twitter and at the Hughesy on Instagram. I specifically demand everyone follow me on Instagram. I won't follow you back. I won't reply to your DMs. If you make a joke in my comment section, I'm not even going to respond to it. But I want everyone to follow me on there because it helps. Instagram's a perfect place for getting guests if you've got a big enough account. So everybody follow me. That's the way it is. And you can follow me on Twitter if you want, but I don't use it as much anymore because John Wangland has a bunch of fake accounts that he goes in and reports everything, and he tries to get people kicked off. So fuck him and fuck Twitter and fuck everybody. But do follow me on social media.
Awesome. Great stuff, Hughesy. Thank you for all the time. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.